Well, good morning, Vox. It's so good to be with you all. I hope you're all navigating this fall season the best way you can, including those of you who are adjusting to virtual learning and virtual school at home. I know it's a lot. In our lectionary text today, Jesus tells us a story that confronts our understanding of God's generosity and what our invitation is in how we practice our own generosity. And so before we jump in, I want to invite you and give you a moment to reflect on this question. Why do we practice generosity to others? You know, what motivates your generosity? So I'll give you a moment to reflect on that question at home, share with those around you, and offer any of your thoughts on the live chat. So I'll give you a moment to do that. And as you continue to reflect on that and offer your thoughts, you know, for me, what motivates my generosity, you know, sometimes I just want to be helpful or caring. Sometimes I want to appreciate someone or maybe even return the favor. Or sometimes I want to look good, you know, make an impression. One of the more dramatic demonstrations of generosity that I've experienced and witnessed numerous times growing up in Asian culture is whenever we would eat at a restaurant with my parents' friends, there would always be a big battle for the check at the end of the meal, guaranteed. And it was the ultimate sign and gesture of generosity if you were able to end up with the check and pay for it. And sometimes as a kid, my parents would involve me in their scheme. And since I was small, I was quick and nimble, and I could sneak under the table and grab the check. But there was honor and prestige in paying for everyone else's meal and for people to notice your generosity. And for us, if you know, we're really honest, sometimes we do have selfish motives, or we're very selective in who we're generous with, because we're trying to earn something from others. This is how Henry Nouwen describes it. He says, giving yourself to others without expecting anything in return is only possible when you have been fully received. Only when you know yourself as unconditionally loved, that is, fully received by God, can you give gratuitously or generously. A lot of giving and receiving has a violent quality because the givers and receivers act more out of need than out of trust. What looks like generosity is actually manipulation. And what looks like love is really a cry for affection or support. And he hits pretty hard on this limitation and the selfish motives of our generosity, especially when we're unable to disconnect our need to earn or receive love from our practice of generosity, and they become merged with one another. And so the question I want us to reflect on this morning is, how can our generosity more accurately reflect the divine generosity that God offers us? You know, what can we learn and experience from God's generosity that will hopefully shape our own? And in the story that Jesus tells, he provides a window not only into God's generosity, but also invites us to reflect on our response to divine generosity and how that impacts our own practice. And so we start in verse 1 of Matthew 20. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. And then when he went out about 9 o'clock again, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, you also go into the vineyard and I will pay you whatever is right. And so they went. And as the story continues, the landowner goes back again at noon, again at 3 p.m., again at 5 p.m., and each time he still finds people looking for work. And he offers all of them a job for the remainder of the day. And there's a couple of things that stand out to me. You know, first, there's probably a hierarchy of who gets picked for jobs. You know, the stronger looking ones, you know, the ones in their youthful prime, those with, you know, experienced skill sets, those would have been the ones who got snatched up early in the morning. And anyone who's left later and later in the day, they're probably the ones who are older, maybe weaker, unskilled. And then secondly, the landowner keeps going back to hire more people, right? It doesn't matter if the cream of the crop are all gone. It doesn't matter if the only ones left are the ones that no one else will hire. It doesn't matter that he probably has more than enough workers already. The landowner is simply trying to include as many people as possible. And his only requirement seems to be whether or not they need work. And for us, we're invited to reflect on how divine generosity is intentionally expansive and inclusive beyond who we might consider. You know, that's the image of the landowner going back again and again, looking for more and more people to bring in. You know, expanding the invitation and growing the pool of people who can experience generosity. And maybe a question we can ask ourselves is, right, is our generosity becoming more expansive and inclusive, or is it becoming more selective and exclusive? You know, when we think about the people we're generous with, are we moving beyond that circle and group of people? Because that pushes against our natural tribal tendencies. You know, we stick with who we know and who we're comfortable with those who agree with us and who might return the favor. You know, it's easy to be generous in that environment. But is that the divine generosity we're invited to receive and practice? Having a more expansive view of who we're invited to be generous with allows us to move beyond those tribes. Richard Rohr puts it this way. He says, when we practice a generosity of spirit, we are in many ways practicing all the other pillars of joy. In generosity, there is a wider perspective in which we see our connection to all others. There is a humility that recognizes our place in the world and acknowledges that at another time, we could be the one in need, whether that need is material, emotional, or spiritual. He's saying that, you know, the more we expand our circle and practice of generosity, the more we recognize and acknowledge that we're all in it together, right? And we're all in need of the same generosity. Because it goes beyond just giving something to someone, but we're actually entering into a space of mutuality with each other. Recently, Billy Joel's daughter confirmed a story about how her dad would never sell the front row seats for his concerts. He said for years, scalpers would sell them for, you know, outrageous amount of money, and it ended up being a bunch of rich people sitting in the front and not really engaging the show with him. And so he started holding those front row seats, and each show he would send crew members to the back of the venue where the worst seats were, and they would bring them up to the front row. And as a result, these fans got to enjoy the best seats, and he had the mutual experience of playing to an excited and engaged audience up front. And that was Billy Joel's way of gifting his fans and expanding who could actually experience front row seats. And for us, how can we expand our circle of generosity? Maybe something we can practice this week is to first reflect on who we're currently comfortable and willing to be generous with, and then consider how to move one step beyond our current circle, maybe expand it by one more person that we normally wouldn't have considered. And then we continue in verse 8. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last, and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now, when the first came, they thought they would receive more, But each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, 'These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat.' And so when the landowner pays everyone, you know, he starts with the ones who worked the least, gave them a full day's wage. And when those who worked the entire day saw this, they were probably doing the math in their heads, right? If these people just got paid a full day for working, you know, 1 hour, my payout should be at least 8 times that much, if not more. But instead, they got the same payment. And so they're upset and frustrated and resentful about what they were given. Because if fairness is the goal, then all this complaining and resentment feels appropriate and justified. But for us, we're invited to consider how divine generosity isn't based on fairness, but it's based on grace. Jesus is trying to confront our attachment to fairness and how much we love comparing what we have with others. And if I'm honest, you know, my initial response to this story is that it is unfair. I mean, how is it fair that someone who worked a full day in extreme heat gets paid the same amount as someone who worked for maybe an hour as the sun is setting? And that comes from, you know, the merit-based worldview that's been embedded in my mind and my life. You know, the grade that you get is based on how much you studied. The promotion is based on your performance. You have to put in the appropriate amount of work to receive the appropriate amount of reward. I mean, that's what's fair. I was reminded of this recently when I was asking my daughter, Gabby, about how her classes were going so far. She's in 8th grade, and she gave me permission to share this. But she was telling me how frustrating it is for her when she gets put into a breakout group for a class project, and everyone else immediately turns off their videos and audio. And she's trying to give her thoughts and ask them what they think, but no one will respond or participate. And so she ends up doing all the work. And then she thinks it's unfair that they all get credit for the project when they didn't do anything. And I'm like, I totally get you, Gabby, right? I mean, if you need me to Zoom bomb your group next time and set them straight, right, I wouldn't embarrass her like that. But that's definitely unfair. And I think that's how we're all wired and conditioned to think. And like all of the stories that Jesus tells, he holds them up like a mirror and invites us to find ourselves in the story. And I'll admit that I do identify with the early workers, probably because I have an attachment to fairness. And the question I need to ask myself is, what if I identified myself with the late workers? Or maybe a more important question is, why don't I associate myself with the late workers? And I think it's because I don't want to be seen as someone who doesn't deserve what I get. Like, I've convinced myself that I can be in control of what I earn and what I deserve. And Jesus is being subversive and undercuts the whole idea of fairness and generosity, because it has nothing to do with what I've done or deserve. Divine generosity is based on grace, and it's meant for the worker that hasn't earned it themselves. And until I put myself in their shoes, I won't be able to fully receive God's generosity and fully give generosity in the same way. And for us, maybe we can try an Ignatian practice of reflecting on scripture this week. You know, St. Ignatius developed a contemplative practice for scripture where we put ourselves in the story and imagine what it would be like to be certain characters. And so this week, spend time imagining what it would be like to be one of the late workers. Imagine what it would feel like standing in the marketplace all day long, waiting to be hired, only to get passed over again and again. Imagine being offered a job by this landowner at the end of the day, and how that might be a relief and a surprise. And imagine how you would have reacted getting handed cash for a full day's worth of work when you probably work barely an hour. And maybe as we imagine ourselves as the late worker and how they experience generosity based on grace, then our perspective and experience will become more in line with divine generosity and impact how we receive and practice it ourselves. And then we close in verse 13. But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" And so the last will be first, and the first will be last. And so the story closes with the landowner calling out the early workers for their reaction to his generosity. And what's interesting to note here is that his generosity isn't really a display of extravagance or even abundance, but it's actually a display of giving each person equally what they need for the day. And it seems like the early workers felt entitled to abundance, but the landowner was more concerned about making sure everyone had enough first. And for us, we're invited to consider how divine generosity ensures justice and equity for everyone. Like, even though there is an abundance to God's generosity, the priority of distributing that abundance is to make sure everyone has enough first. I mean, that seems to be the primary value in God's economy. The other lectionary text for today is actually from the book of Exodus, which describes the journey of the Israelites traveling to a new land after being freed from slavery in Egypt. And God provides what they called manna, which was an edible substance that would cover the ground every morning. And there was always just enough for each person to have for that day. Like, no more, no less. It was just enough. No one needed to hoard more because God's generosity would always provide just enough. And it's that same idea in the prayer that Jesus teaches his disciples to ask God for our daily bread. No more, no less. And what Jesus is reminding us through this story is that divine generosity offers what's enough for all people, regardless of who they are, whether they deserve it or not. And when Jesus says the last will be first and the first will be last, it's because God's generosity is driven by justice and equity to provide what's enough for each person. It reminds me of a news story I came across a couple years ago where a writer from New York posted a tweet about how she had to rely on school meals for her primary source of food each day growing up. And so she asked people to donate to local schools to help pay off student lunch debts. And in response, over $100,000 was raised to help erase lunch debts of students who simply couldn't even afford that meal. I mean, that's literally daily bread. And that's one small practical way of how generosity is making sure there's enough for everyone first. And so for us, what is our work in practicing generosity that ensures justice and equity for each person? How might we use our own abundance in this current season and state of our world, whether it's material resources or access or influence? Like, how can we use those things in a way that prioritizes ensuring each person around us has enough? And as we try to align our own generosity with God's generosity, we're invited to consider how all of us are actually the late workers. None of us can earn divine generosity that we've been given. We don't deserve it, and yet God chooses to expand the circle of generosity to include all of us, simply because of who we are and not what we've done. This is how Henry Nouwen finished his quote on generosity that I started off with at the beginning of my homily. He continued on and said, "When you know yourself as fully loved, you will be able to give according to the other's capacity to receive. And you will be able to receive according to the other's capacity to give. You will be grateful for what is given to you without clinging to it, and joyful for what you can give without bragging about it. You will be a free person, free to love, free to be generous." And that's my prayer for us this season, Box, that we would find freedom to be generous and also find freedom in being generous, to confront our own entitlement to fairness and abundance, and to receive the grace and generosity that we can't earn and don't deserve. And may that move us to give generously in a way that creates equity and justice for everyone to have enough. And so we ask all this in the divine generosity of the Father, the expansive grace of the Son, and the freedom of the Spirit. Amen.